Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
What's up, everybody? This is Marty Friedman, and you are listening to Talking Metal.
Listen, it's January 2015. Why not kickstart your new year and challenge yourself to learn something new with a free 10-day trial to lynda.com? Lynda.com is used by millions of people around the world and has over 3,000 courses on topics like web development, photography, visual design, and business, as well as software training like Excel, WordPress, and Photoshop. I'm actually going to be learning Premiere. It's like an editing software, you know, like Avid or Final Cut, but it's by Adobe. And a friend of mine just said, go to lynda.com to learn how to use it. That's what he did. And he was raving about the courses and videos he saw on lynda.com. So that's a true story. Anyway, all of their courses, of course, being lynda.com's courses, are taught by experts, and new courses are added to the site every week. Whether you want to set your new financial goals, find work-life balance, invest in a new hobby, ask your boss for a raise, find a new job, or improve upon your current job skills in 2015, lynda.com has something for everyone. Sign up for your free 10-day trial today by visiting lynda.com/talkingmetal, and you'll get unlimited access to every course on lynda.com, access to view tutorials on a tablet, you know, iPhone or Android mobile devices, access to new courses that are added every week. Some of the courses, again, I recommend is if you're into video editing, you know, I'm a TV guy, that's where I make my living. And again, lots of great, great TV production video editing courses available on lynda.com. There's also a lot of great audio recording techniques that you can learn. You can get started in audio and music production, performing videos. There's even the band St. Vincent has some cool videos that you can learn from on there. So yeah, it's something for everyone, guys. Definitely go check it out. Do something good for yourself this year. You know, it's 2015. Why not sign up for a free 10-day trial to lynda.com by visiting lynda.com/talkingmetal? Come on, go ahead. I challenge you to learn something new in 2015. Here's today's episode. Hey guys, welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. On today's show, we have very special guest Marty Friedman and a very special co-host, Mitch LaFon. Mitch, how are you?
Good, good. Always a pleasure to do these with you.
Oh, I'm glad to have you here, and I'm also glad to have Marty Friedman on the show. We've done well over 500 episodes of Talking Metal now, and we never have spoken with Marty Friedman, so it's always nice to get somebody that I've never had the opportunity to talk to. And this is a fun interview. He gave me close to 30 minutes, and we talk about everything from his new record Inferno all the way back to his band Cacophony, which featured Jason Becker and himself on guitar. And it's kind of ironic because Jason was just on the episode before this episode, so we've had both the Cacophony guitar players on the this episode and the last episode. on Talking Metal. Yeah.
Cacophony reunion right there. But there but what go. A scoop. With everything going on in the world of Megadeth and rumors coming out that would he rejoin, would he not rejoin, and you got him on the phone, which is fantastic. And of course, being in Japan like he is, he's not doing a lot of North American press, so double kudos for that one. Good scoop.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. And it's funny because he's somebody I always wanted to interview. And when his video came out, he released a promotional video a month and a half ago for a track off the new record. I reached out to his label and they came back and said, we'll definitely get him to you after Christmas. You know, stay tuned. And sure enough, they came back and brought him right to me. So, you know, it makes me happy. I feel like podcasts in general are getting more recognition nowadays from labels, and it is exciting for me to as a podcaster to bring in these names. I mean, you've been getting great names on your show, which is One-on-One with Mitch LaFon, which is part of Talking Metal Digital. Absolutely. Tell us about who you have coming up on the show.
Well, you know, the next one is a double episode. I've got John Humphreys of Seether. And, you know, there's a band that when people start talking about great rock bands, the name doesn't come up very often, which is sort of ridiculous because this year or in 2014, Isolate and Medicate, their new album, went to number 4 on Billboard. They've had 2 songs that went into the top 20, and just an absolutely talented band. They keep playing to sold out shows. So there you go. And then I've got Kyle Sanders on the back end of that episode, who's in Hell Yeah. And of
nice.
Course, Hell Yeah's got the Blood for Blood album and tour. You know, great episode. And, it's a little outside of the hair metal that I normally do and stuff like that, but both guys, absolutely great. And I did bring some hair to it. Joel Hoekstra, who's with Whitesnake now and was with Night Ranger previously, co-hosted the episode. And really proud of the episode. I think it turned out really nice.
Yeah, I saw Joel on Broadway when he was the onstage guitar player for Rock of Ages, which, wow, what a talent that guy is.
Yeah, absolute talent. And by the way, you're so right about the podcasting thing. You know, I'm up to episode 84. This one with Seether will be episode 84. And on the first one, when I reached out to some of the publicists, you know, Joe Perry and Ted Nugent, they sort of went, yeah, all right, sure. And as we're getting into episode 84, and you've hit 500 and something, the calls are easier to make now. You get responses right away, and you get these big name interviews that are set up within 48 hours sometimes. And it just goes to show that podcasting really has taken a hold.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And on that note, let's get into a little classic Marty Friedman, classic Megadeth, if you will. This is Reckoning Day, a song written by Dave Mustaine, Dave Elfson, and Marty Friedman.
Nobody else. Oh, I like the way.
What you just heard was a little classic Megadeth, the classic lineup of Megadeth, which included, of course, today's guest, Marty Friedman. And we're going to get into the interview with Marty in just a few minutes. But I wanted to ask you, Mitch, about your friend, Dave Elfson. You talked with him pretty frequently, right?
Yeah, you know, I got the chance to meet Dave during these during interviews and stuff. And we've become Facebook friends. And we'll write each other every so often. Absolutely a great guy. You would think that having been in Megadeth for all these years and being so successful that it would be one of these untouchables with a big attitude, and absolutely not. Just an incredibly nice person and a huge Kiss fan, which I think is part of the connection, is that we get to talk Kiss once in a while. And of course, Megadeth covered Strange Ways by Kiss. So, you know, absolutely great guy.
Cool, cool. And I believe, at least on his Wikipedia page, it says Marty Friedman was kind of inspired to become a musician after attending a Kiss concert. So,
yeah, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised. A lot of people that are in our sort of 40s and 50s who are in music at some point started, were inspired by, became inspired by, because of Kiss. Kiss was huge in the 70s and 80s, and that's where we sort of all cut our teeth, right?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And Marty's first band, or one of his first bands that kind of became known, was a band I heard back when I was probably like 13 on a record called US Metal Volume 2. And I still have it in my collection. It has all these different guitar players on it. It was all these kind of shredders. And it came out, it had to be like 83, maybe 80, even 82. And it was just, again, all original music by unknown shredders, and his band Hawaii was a part of that record, and they had a track on there. I don't actually remember the name of the track, but I remember it was a decent track. And then we heard his name resurface again a couple years later in the great band with Jason Becker, Cacophony, and he is still rocking hard today with this great new record, which came out in 2014, called Inferno. And on that note, let's hear a little bit of the Inferno record, and we will then get right into my interview with Marty Friedman. We'll be right back. Hey, this is Mark Striegel from Talking Metal, and on the line, we have Marty Friedman. How are you, Marty?
Pretty good, man. How you doing?
I'm great, man. Thanks so much for talking with us today. I want to talk to you about Inferno, which is a great record. And, you know, for a lot of us here in the States, you've been somewhat off the radar for the past decade or maybe even more. And I know you've been very successful with your career in Japan, but, you know, we suddenly got hit with this album in 2014, Inferno, which really just blew my mind. I think it's a really great record. And I just wanted to ask you, was there a conscious effort with you or your people to go after the global market and kind of get your name back out there, you know, outside of Japan?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for your kind words on it. Well, sort of, yeah. I mean, in Japan, things have gone really well for me, a lot better than I even had anticipated when I came over here. And it came to the point where you can only be in one place at a time, and where I was more of an international musician before I moved to Japan. Once I got to Japan, I just wound up doing so many things here in Japan that I couldn't break away to do the things that keeps you in the public eye outside of where you live, like right. Going on tour, world tours and long tours and stuff. And I kind of had to relegate that to, like, you know, 3-week runs and just little kind of outside ventures outside of Japan, and really kept me out of the public eye outside of Japan for quite some time. And, you know, which is fine with me. You know, I was really enjoying everything I was doing in Japan, as I still am. But came to a point, I guess it's about 2 years ago now, that Prosthetic, the record company Prosthetic, came, got a hold of me, and they said, listen, I know you've released a lot of records in Japan only and some in Europe only and nothing in America, and I think there's a lot of people in America who'd want to hear that. And I'm like, are you serious? And yeah, so they basically, what they did was re-released a lot of my Japan-only albums with the intent on capping it off with a worldwide new release once all the re-releases have kind of gone out there. And that's exactly what we did, right according to the plan. And it was a great experience. You know, I really had to make a record that was not only for the Japanese audience, and I had to think deep and hard about what the whole world would want to hear from me, if anything. So it was a long, arduous process to get Inferno done, but once it was done, it's something I'm really, really excited about. Even now, it's been out a couple months already.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's getting great reviews, and again, I just think it sounds incredible. Let's break down some of the songs. I mean, because we have some really great guitar playing on this record, but also some really interesting and good songwriting. One that jumps right out at me, I Can't Relax. This is a real fun song. Can you tell us a little bit about who you collaborated with on this song and a little bit about the song?
Thank you very much. This is probably the closest thing to a rock and roll moment on the album. It's a pretty heavy affair, other than this song, which is something that happened between myself and Danko Jones. And we've been kind of fans of each other for a long time and friends, and we've always been in contact. And we've always kind of threatened each other to do something together, and it finally happened. And it happened very naturally and organically. I mean, if he was in my band, we'd have a song like this. If I was in his band, we'd have a song like this. So it's like really a perfect collaboration, what a collaboration should be. It should be like the ideal union of two people. You know, it's not right. Like one guy and some guy blangs a solo over it and sends it in an email. It's really like a collaboration. So it sounds like what we both would do together. So I'm really happy with not only all the songs on the record like that, but this one with Danko. I mean, it's like two buds in high school coming up with a rock song and making it a reality. And it's one of my faves.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about Alexi from Children of Bodom, who also joins you for a track. How did that all come about?
Yeah, Alexi came on the project about halfway through, and there was a big long list of people that the record company compiled, people in the world of metal and rock, and that have, you know, mentioned me as an influence or said nice things about me in the press or something to that extent. And I started contacting the people on this list to see who was interested in doing a collaboration. And Alexi was one of the guys, and I'm a big fan of his work. And we came up with the song Lycanthrope. And the way I did it for this whole record really was to let the guests write. You know, I didn't want it to be like guest solos or guest vocals. I wanted it to be that plus something deeper. You know, if you write a song, your ass is on the line a little bit more than just throwing a solo out. So I wanted him to come up with the song, and then, of course, I could add to it and arrange it and produce it and play on it and all that. But having him write the actual song, the music and the lyrics and the vocals and all that really gets his flavor on there, kind of like the Danko song as well. So, like, yeah. My flavor is undoubtedly all over everything to the extent of too much at points. But when the guests come in, you can really feel the guests in there, and that's what the reason of having guests are in the first place. So that was a really, really neat neat collaboration. I mean, again, it sounds like if I was in his band, Children of Bodom, it would sound like that. If he was in my band, it would sound like that. So it's a kind of unique collaboration.
Right on. And there's a song called Whores that features a guy that you've had in your life for many, many decades. Jason Becker is involved with that song. Now, obviously, we know Jason's condition now that he can't actually pick up a guitar and play a guitar. So what was his involvement in the song? Is it songwriting, and how does he go about doing that?
Songwriting, I don't know. Have you seen his movie Not Dead Yet?
I have, yes, I have. It's great.
So if you've seen that, you've got an idea of how he writes songs. But specifically, this song was kind of born from watching that movie. There's a scene in the movie where they're showing how he writes songs with his dad on a guitar and a computer, and he's got this melody going, and I just thought it was a really nice kind of a spark of an idea. So I got in touch with Jason. I said, dude, are you using that melody for anything? The melody from the movie? He said, no, not yet. I'm like, how about if I take that and any other ideas you have and add my stuff to it and collaborate on a song together? He said, sure. So he sent me a whole bunch of ideas, and I just kind of put them through the filter and added my ideas to it, and put together this kind of epic, long, kind of kind of like a cacophony on steroids type of song.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
And that's how it happened.
Yeah, great stuff. And you know, again, guys, if you're listening to this, the movie is Not Dead Yet, and it's the story of Jason Becker, and Marty is a part of the movie, so I definitely suggest everybody track that down and watch it. And while we're talking about Jason and cacophony, how do you view those two cacophony albums now that, you know, 27 years or so has passed between the time when you did them? Do they hold up for you? Are you fond memories of making them?
Absolutely. The fondest memories of making them and all that whole period of time and touring and the band and all that. I really haven't gone back and listened to that stuff much, or really anything, really. I've never been one to go back and really listen to older stuff that I've done. But what I can tell you is it seems that more people mention it as time goes by than they did as it happened in real time. In real time, you know, it was kind of an underground thing, but people bring it up constantly, and which is fantastic. I mean, maybe it took a long time to grow on people or something, but I think people bring it up much more now than they did then, you know. And if it helps them discover Inferno because of Cacophony, or if they discover Cacophony because of Inferno, that's all good.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit fearful of going back and listening to it, because there may be some certain things that I'd want to change on it, but I'm sure I really, really enjoyed it at the time.
Yeah, and it was, for the time, a pretty unique thing. I mean, you know,
with two guitar players, intense guitar players like yourself and Jason, they're in one band, there really wasn't much, if any, of that at that time. I mean, Racer X comes to mind, but I don't even know if Bruce Bouillet had joined Racer X at the time you were doing Cacophony. And do you feel it was groundbreaking when you think back on it?
At the time, absolutely. It was groundbreaking to a fault. I mean, nobody could really handle so much guitar dissonance, really. And we were not as much into showing off as we were into like kind of breaking the sound barrier of what people expected from guitar heroes. At that time, there was a lot of guitar heroism going on, and it all seemed to be based around technique and people playing Bach fugues on guitar and stuff like that. And we weren't about that at all. We were groundbreaking, yes, but, that groundbreaking thing didn't really help us with popularity,
right.
Hence our image. I mean, if you look at the photos that we took, we were trying to look like Poison or something like that, or Rat or some kind of like, glam rock band. And that's really why people showed up to see us play, because they'd see our picture and we'd look like every other band in the day. And then when we get up on stage, we'd be playing all these like, odd time signatures and all these dissonant guitar harmonies and all this really difficult guitar stuff. And it was very strange. I mean, girls, you know, we were doing that for girls, you know, because girls, they don't care. Once they're watching you play, they don't really care what you're playing.
Right.
But at the time, we really, sonically, we weren't really in the latest fashion at all. We weren't very fashionable, but we tried to look like every other band on the strip and probably failed miserably at it. But that's the only thing that got us really any attention at all.
Right.
Because the only people who could really handle musically what we were doing were really the outsiders and the really strange people and guitar fanatics. And there weren't many of them back then.
Right. And what about Jason's Perpetual Burn record? You're listed as a producer on that. Was that, what did you do as a producer on that album? Was it more guidance, or were you heavily involved in helping him craft the songs? Or what did a producer do on that record?
On his record, what I did was, I probably was very involved in choosing takes, which takes are good, and developing ideas. At that point, Jason had just grown in leaps and bounds from the first Cacophony album, which he really didn't really contribute that much to. He was like literally just born. You know, he was playing amazingly, but he hadn't really developed so many ideas musically yet. But once Perpetual Burn happened, he just immediately turned into this Beethoven of brilliance. And
wow.
He was just like, that was all him. That record really, really is not a whole lot of my print on it, my footprint on it. But I did a lot of the sonic choices, you know, making things sound the way I thought they should sound. And I chose a lot of the takes and maybe gave him a little direction, melodic direction. But the majority of the work on that record was Jason.
Right on. Well, to kind of circle around here and bring it back to modern day, as I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, you know, you've been, for a lot of us hard rock guys and heavy metal guys in the States, slightly off the radar for the last decade or so, but we occasionally read stuff about you in Japan that, you know, about you're this massive star in Japan, you're on TV doing numerous TV shows, and you walk down the streets and everyone knows who you are. And I was just wondering how accurate these descriptions are. Do you feel that they are correct and you are a massive star in Japan?
I would, even if I was a massive star, I would never ever think of referring to myself as a massive star. And I wouldn't even say that anyway. Massive star is a ridiculous comment, but I have done a whole lot of TV, maybe 700 programs.
Wow.
So people do know who I am, and people do recognize me, you know, but that's really meaningless in the scheme of things. It's a part of the normal day of life, you know. But I have done a ton of TV, and I've done a ton of music, and my own music and other people's music, and I've done every possible musical collaboration in Japan, and just lived out my dreams several times over here in Japan. Played the Tokyo Dome over and over, Budokan, all the biggest venues. Done everything. A lot of that is accurate to a point. I'm still working very hard at doing my thing, you know, so I don't really look at it the way the media puts it out. You know, everything from the media, you know, they might show a picture of me doing some TV show, and then people think all of a sudden that I'm American Idol or something like that. It's not like that. I just I do a lot of television, and I do a lot of everything else too. I do radio. I have a lot of stuff in newspapers and magazines and every possible media. But it's all just stuff I love to do, and if it brings attention to my music, then it's all the better.
Good, good. And what initially drew you to Japan? Why did you move to Japan?
There came a point in time where I started listening to Japanese domestic music, the stuff that was currently on the charts, 100% of the time. And I just got real disillusioned with American, European rock and heavy metal and pop especially. And I found myself listening to Japanese music all the time and really, really digging it. And, you know, I'd look at the top 10 in Japan and like 9 of the songs I would like and want to go out and buy. And then I'd look at the top 10 in America and rarely there would be even one that I'd be slightly interested in. So it was really kind of a no-brainer that Japan would be the place where I'd want to, you know, add my musical contributions and where I could really do interesting things. And I had no idea, you know, things would get realized as well as I have wound up doing. But, you know, I think any artist, you know, even calling yourself an artist is kind of lame, but any artist or real musician kind of intrinsically knows what they need to do to get to the next step to forward their vision. And it was like kind of a no-brainer that I had to go to Japan and work with people here. And, everybody knows. I mean, if you live in Oklahoma and your favorite music is New Orleans jazz,
right,
it's a no-brainer that you should go to New Orleans.
Totally.
So it's really kind of that simple, actually.
Cool. Now, I was just watching a music video for Undertow, which is one of the songs off the 2014 Marty Friedman release Inferno. Again, a great record. Let's talk about this music video. The girl is practicing martial arts, and there's kind of a little story going on there, cut with Back to You jamming on the guitar. As far as martial arts go, is it something you study or have an interest in?
Actually, I have almost zero interest in martial arts.
Okay.
But what I do have is an interest in the story of the video, and the martial arts in the video pretty much represents anything that is a thing of beauty that takes work to do and where there's outside forces trying to keep you from doing it. In the video, you know, it's a short video. It's only 4 minutes, so there's only so much story you can tell. But, I mean, it's a girl whose brother, for some reason, passed away. His brother's dream was to be a martial arts person, and despite her parents not wanting her to go into that type of thing, she goes against them and privately practice this martial arts, this karate, and makes something beautiful out of it.
Right.
And I think really the video shows the beauty of what she's doing and the beauty of like doing something with a motivation, you know, and a reason for doing it. And, if that comes across in the video, then that's pretty much the point of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. It does. And two more questions and then I'll let you go. There's a band out of Japan, which is really making waves here, especially in the media, but they're also, I've seen them live, and they're also gaining a big fan base here in the States and in Canada, called Baby Metal. And I just, they're kind of unique. Some people love them, some people hate them. Being that they are from Japan, I wanted to at least get your take on Baby Metal.
Certainly. Well, first of all, their guitarist is the guitarist in my solo band.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, his name is Takayoshi Omura, so he does all of my touring.
Wow.
As well as Baby Metal. I think they're absolutely fantastic. And I love them for the reason that you just said, is the fact that some people love them and some people hate them. It's very polarizing. But as someone who's into metal and into pushing the extremes in metal, I think they're fantastic. Because
yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, metal's been around for a long time, and if something doesn't make it fresh, it's really quite laughable. You know, a lot of times metal becomes a caricature, I don't know how to pronounce it, of itself, you know, and it's just, it becomes Beavis and Butthead, you know, unless it evolves, and some people aren't going to like it, you know, but if it takes three preteen Japanese girls to sing over Meshuga type of heavy metal riffs to do something interesting in metal, then so be it. I just think it's a wicked project, and it's done with the utmost of love for the genre and the love for doing something exciting. And I just think they're fantastic, and you're going to hear a lot more from them.
Excellent. Cool. And one last question before we let you go. We definitely have to just give you one Megadeth question. You were a part of that classic Megadeth lineup that most people believe was, you know, the best Megadeth lineup. Is there any interest from you on ever reuniting with Megadeth to do another tour or another album?
Well, I've never really said never to anything like that. But just because there's a vacancy in the band, that's certainly no reason for me to be interested in it. You know, I have great relationships with everybody in the band, always have. I would not be against considering anything that they would be willing to, you know, bring up for me to consider. So if there was something that would be exciting for me to consider or exciting for me to do, I would be more than willing to check into it. But I assume that there's a lot of talk about it because there's, you know, a vacancy in the band. But there's been plenty of vacancies in the band since I left, you know. And, you know, I wouldn't rule it out, but I wouldn't get your hopes up either, you know. So I really don't really have anything to say about it.
I got you. Cool. And you're working on an autobiography. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. It's been a work in progress for the last several months, and we've got a couple more months to go. And it's going to be interesting because actually, you know, I've really got a lot of things that people don't know, you know. And when I was in Megadeth in the America, I'm pretty much mostly known for Megadeth. But oddly enough, at that time, you know, I didn't do a whole lot of talking, you know, other than music related stuff, guitar related stuff, you know. We had a vocalist who did a whole lot of the really interesting talking for that band. So, there's a whole side of the story, my side of the story that really hasn't been told. So of course that'll be in there, but even a bigger part of the story is what I've done since then. American person who's done well in America and then come to a completely different culture and a completely different world and a different language and a different medium. That whole experience, I think, is going to open a whole lot of eyes out there. And it's got a lot of juicy information in there as well. So it's something that I've been looking forward to doing. I really wasn't planning on doing it this soon, really, but there have been so many offers to do it. And I got a really good offer from a really great biographer to do this and a great company. And so at least we got started on it. And it's coming along excellent. I really can't wait for people to read it.
Wow. Well, I can't wait to read it myself. So great stuff. And it's been a joy talking to you tonight, Marty. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Mark. It's great talking to you.
I'll hope to talk to you again at some point.
Likewise. Take
okay.
care.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm always ready. Let's get busy. Burn it down on the ground. I hate when somebody tells me to stop moving and sit down. You best believe I'm hyperactive. I'm a paper town. Oh, you're gonna see my face everywhere. And it's gonna drive you crazy. I want you time and time again. I can't relate. What you just heard was I Can't Relax by Marty Friedman and Danko Jones off the Inferno record. You know anything about Danko Jones?
Yeah, he's a Canadian artist.
Yeah, Canadian.
I think it's out of Calgary or something like that. But yeah, no, I've seen him. He, when Guns N' Roses toured here back in, I guess, 2008 or 2009. So somewhere in the 2000s, it was Danko Jones, Sebastian Bach, and Guns N' Roses. And Danko is huge in Canada. Great following. He's got his own podcast, speaking of podcasting. And, you know, for some reason, though, with a lot of these Canadian artists, they really can fill out the venues over here. But when you get them to the States or Australia or in Europe, nobody knows about them, which is a bit of a shame, but Danko's great. Great talent. Absolutely great talent.
I haven't actually heard his podcast, but when we had Lydia Chris on our Talking Metal, on this podcast, Talking Metal, probably like a year ago or so, she was she met up with John and I, and she was like, "Do you know somebody named Danko Jones? He just interviewed me for his podcast." So, yeah, Lydia Chris, episode 49 of the Danko Jones podcast, according to Google.
Yes, there you go.
You should get Lydia on one-on-one. Have you ever spoken with her?
Yeah, you know, Lydia is an upcoming guest. I spoke to her, in fact, just this week. We're trying to work out a schedule, you know, but she'll be on. And I'm also going to have Tommy Thayer's brother on, John Thayer. He's got a new album, and we spoke about Tommy wearing the makeup. And,
nice.
Yeah, so... And we spoke about, you know, some of the fans, as you know, are a little harsh when it comes to Tommy wearing the spaceman makeup. And we got into the whole emotional side about does it hurt and does it not hurt and does it bother and not bother. And so that's coming up on One-on-One with Mitch LaFon. So there's some more Kiss content, but absolutely Lydia Chris is on the schedule. It will happen. It's just a question of finding a time that suits us to get it done.
Yeah, she's great. She's a real character, you know, and she doesn't hold back at all and can really tell some great stories. And she has so many of them, too. Yeah. So I look forward to hearing that for sure. Mitch, thanks again. And again, guys, check out Mitch's podcast. It's part of the Talking Metal Digital family, and you can check it out right on talkingmetal.com or talkingmetaldigital.com. It's also on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, iHeart, TuneIn. It's all over the place. So definitely check out Mitch's show, which I sometimes co-host. So it's always fun to be a part of Mitch's podcast, and we're glad he was part of our podcast here today on Talking Metal. Thanks so much, Mitch.
Our absolute pleasure. And just before I go, you mentioned the Jason Becker interview that you did. I had a chance to read it, listen to it. Fantastic.
Oh, cool.
It was really great stuff. And I'm just glad that Talking Metal gave him a platform, because Jason's a great guy. So thank you for that. And hey, good job.
Yeah, and you know, the one, I guess, scoop we got, which Blabbermouth picked up and it brought in a lot of listens, actually, is that he's mentioned that he wants to, he mentioned that there were other songs written with David Lee Roth that were recorded and not released, and he has mentioned that he wants to release these songs, of course, without David Lee Roth's vocals, maybe another vocalist doing that part on one of his upcoming records. So new David Lee Roth material with Jason Becker could be on the way, of course, without David's actual vocal. So that would be very cool.
Well, you know what? I hope David Lee Roth saw it on the internet and out of the kindness of his heart lets him use those vocals, because first of all, as a Roth fan, that would be cool. And you know, listen, Jason's had it hard enough. Let's cut him some slack. Let him release the songs as they are, and you know, everybody wins, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and it sounds like there was one song, at least one song, that again was recorded in the studio with Roth's vocals. May have not been completely finalized, the vocals, but there was a vocal track laid down for a song that Jason wrote and recorded with David that never made that A Little Ain't Enough record. So yeah, why not release it, give Jason the money, because it sounds like with all his medical and expenses, you know, he could definitely use it.
Yeah, and listen, David Lee Roth, it's not up to me to tell him how to spend his money or whatever, of course, but I think he could live without, you know, the royalties on this one song. So let Jason have it.
Absolutely, definitely. All right, on that note, thanks again, Mitch, and we will see you guys next time.